Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Rainer's Radio, practical training for joint heirs with Christ, with your host, Diane Thomas.
Good evening, and welcome to Rainer's Radio. This is Diane Thomas, your host, and we're going to continue to talk about tithing. And last week we were talking about tithing and the law of Moses and what was specifically written down in the first five books of our Bible, which is known as the books of Moses. And we won't go into too much of the history of that, but that's always something interesting to find the context under which things were actually written down. But for our purposes, what we wanted to come away with, that in the books of Moses, there was a progression in what was written down in regarding to the law, and within that, there was a progression in a writing down of what the context and the specifics were regarding tithing, or the giving to particular groups, or to God, or to the community, certain percentages of certain aspects of a person's produce or their flock or whatever they had. What we want to come away with is that, yes, the scriptures are very specific. The books of Moses were very specific in regards to the tithe under the law. But in the law of Moses, there's no place where the tithe is broken away from the other aspects of the law. So there's no place that the tithe, that God tells his people that the only aspect of the law that you have to follow is tithing. It's the tithe is always an element, a part, you know, say number 16 of a list of 35, these are the things you have to do to fulfill my law. The tithing itself was never, ever, 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 ever broken out as a separate element. So in the Old Testament, in the book of Moses, when we talk about tithing, it is always in the context of fulfilling all of the elements of the law. And even if we just went back to the Ten Commandments, tithing isn't in there. But when we go into the specifics, the feasts, the how to plant crops, how to treat those that are strangers and foreigners, and how to treat one another, and who shall decide the arguments. It was a broad governmental, societal instruction. And again, the tithe was never, ever, ever broken out as a distinct element. So we want to come away from looking at that with that understanding that how we look at tithing today is very often, okay, if we tithe, God will do thus and so. So far, we haven't gotten anywhere near the tithing as a separate element for us to do today, okay? Can we agree with that? That it's all or nothing. If you can't fulfill all of the law, you have not fulfilled the law. So it's not just fulfilling the tithing part and then you will get the blessings of the law. It's every element included, then you will receive the blessings of and the benefits of fulfilling the law. Now, also remember that there were no penalties to not fulfilling, for not tithing. the penalty was only if you did not fulfill the whole law. So it was never broken out in a negative way either, that if you don't tithe, you won't receive the benefits. It was always, if you did not fulfill the whole law, you would not be God's people. So again, we want to understand what we have been taught in the context of what was written down. If we're being taught that the tithing is thus and so according to scriptures, we want to go back and really see for ourselves what is really said in the scriptures. Learn for ourselves, do our own research, and then, of course, always be asking, Lord, what is your truth? What do you have to say about this? And that always comes back, as we always do, to being able to hear God clearly for ourselves. And again, as also, if we've also talked about, just because we are in disagreement or agreement on a particular topic doesn't give us an automatic conclusion as to what to do about it. Whether it's arguing with people about it, leaving a fellowship, or using that, since we agree on this topic, everything else must be accepted. We fellowship with those that love God and are learning to hear from Him and are in dependence on Him, not because we agree or disagree with them. We fellowship with those that God has put us in fellowship with. So now we understand through the books, the five books of Moses, the law has been established. There's a historical element to this, and we're going to get into that a little bit. But the books of Moses cover a specific time period. Once that time period is over, the nation of Israel enters into a new time period. And with that time period, the law is expanded to cover new circumstances and new situations. And with that, we are going to look at how those expansions and additions affect the concept of tithing after the initial books of the law of Moses have been concluded. And again, we're not going to talk about who wrote the book of Moses and things like that and how is it translated. But for now, we're just going to look at how we have modern day Western religious movements have concluded, what conclusions we've made and what we've based those conclusions on regarding the concept of tithing. So we're going to look at, moving forward, additions to the law of Moses. When we talk about the Judeo-Christian tradition, we'll get into that sometime, but those are two different things, and that's part of what we are hopefully learning, is that our concept of Christianity, there's a relationship between Judaism and Christianity, but there's also some very, very important distinctions and differences. Just as there was a lot of similarities between Judaism and the religions, beliefs that came before, many of the tenets of Judaism have a lot of similarities to other religions. But then we also see the tremendous differences. So, it always comes down to not our religion or even our beliefs, but our relationship with God. What is governing our relationship with God, our relationships with others, and even how we see ourselves, our relationship with ourselves. So, additions to the law of Moses. Now, we're going to be going into some real specific situations, and we're just going to take them at face value that, historically speaking, they happened and exactly the way they were written. So we're not going to get distracted into the historical context. Again, our focus is on what was written about the tithe and how that or laid a foundation properly or improperly regarding tithing today. So outside of the Law of Moses, there are several references outside the written law, which is Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. And these include additions or clarifications to that which was already established. Now, these all refer back specifically to the written law of Moses. So the written law of Moses was not replaced by anything, but was expanded upon, expounded. So we're going to start with 1 Samuel chapter 8, verses 6 through 22. And this is a description of the king, the whole God's concept and admonition regarding Israel's desire to have a king over Israel, instead of God being the king. So starting with, again, 1 Samuel 8, 6 through 22. But the thing displeased Samuel when they said, "Give us a king to judge us." So Samuel prayed to the Lord. And the Lord said to Samuel, "Heed the voice of the people in all that they say to you. For they have not rejected you, but they have rejected me, that I should not reign over them. According to all the works which they have done since the day that I brought them up out of Egypt, even to this day, with which they have forsaken me and served other gods, so they are doing to you also. Now, therefore, heed their voice. However, you shall solemnly forewarn them and show them the behavior of the king who will reign over them." So Samuel told all the words of the Lord to the people who asked him for a king. And he said, "This will be the behavior of the king who will reign over you. He will take your sons and appoint them for his own chariots and to be his horsemen. And some will run before his chariots. He will appoint captains over his thousands and captains over his fifties. Will set some to plow his ground and reap his harvest, and some to make his weapons of war and equipment for his chariots. He will take your daughters to be perfumers, cooks, and bakers, and he will take the best of your fields, your vineyards, and your olive groves, and give them to his servants. He will take a tenth of your grain and your vintage and give it to his officers and servants. And he will take your male servants, your female servants, your finest young men, and your donkeys, and put them to his work. He will take a tenth of your sheep, and you will be his servants. And you will cry out in that day, because of your king, whom you have chosen for yourselves, and the Lord will not hear you in that day. Nevertheless, the people refused to obey the voice of Samuel, and they said, "No, but we will have a king over us, that we also may be like all the nations. Our king may judge us and go out before us and fight our battles. And Samuel heard all the words of the people, and he repeated them in the hearing of the Lord. So the Lord said to Samuel, "Heed their voice and make them a king." And Samuel said to the men of Israel, "Every man go to his city." Now this passage describes how, by rejecting God as their sovereign leader, the Israelites would be required to pay additional costs, monetary, their sons and daughters, animals, servants, and land would all be required by their king, and they would serve the king instead of serving God. And they would cry out to God to deliver them from their leader, and God would not hear them. And notice how many times it said the king would take a tenth. He would take their servants. He would take their land. It was no longer a voluntary or an admonition to give to God, to give to the priests for relationship. The king would take it. He would not ask for it to be given. He would take it. Now then, and again, this is where we talk about the tenth. The tithe, it is merely a portion. It is not, we're not talking about a change in the tithing of what was still to be given to the priests. This was all done in addition to what was still to be given to the priests. And the previous law of Moses didn't change. But in addition to the 20, 30, and 40% that was given to different aspects of their government by the end of the law of Moses, in addition to that, if you want a king, there's going to be additional costs for it. The king is going to take the best of the land and do with it what he chose, whether he kept it for himself or he gave it to his favorite servants. So next, we're going to talk about Hezekiah in 2 Chronicles 30, 23 to chapter 31, 21. And there's a restoration of the law and the, more importantly, the relationship of God, the desire that God has had and has for a relationship, and how it had been distorted and how it was going to be restored. Again, 2 Chronicles 30, verse 23 to chapter 31, verse 21. Then the whole assembly agreed to keep the feast another 7 days, and they kept it another 7 days with gladness. For Hezekiah, king of Judah, gave to the assembly 1,000 bulls and 7,000 sheep. And the leaders gave to the assembly 1,000 bulls and 10,000 sheep. And a great number of priests sanctified themselves. The whole assembly of Judah rejoiced. Now let's just stop here for a second. We're going to talk about this later, but Hezekiah, king of Judah, gave to the assembly 1,000 bulls and 7,000 sheep. And the leaders gave to the assembly 1,000 bulls and 10,000 sheep. Where did those 1,000 bulls and 7,000 sheep come from? They came from what he had taken from the people. The king had nothing except what he took first from the people. So we'll go on from chapter 25. The whole assembly of Judah rejoiced, also the priests and Levites, all the assembly that came from Israel, the sojourners who came from the land of Israel and those who dwelt in Judah. And let's just stop again. At this point in time, the nation of Israel is divided. So there's Israel and there's Judah. So that's why they're talked about in two different ways. Again, just to remind you of the context. 26. So there was great joy in Jerusalem, for since the time of Solomon, the son of David, king of Israel, there had been nothing like this in Jerusalem. Then the priests, the Levites, arose and blessed the people, and their voice was heard. And their prayer came up to his holy dwelling place, to heaven. Now when all this was finished, all Israel who were present went out to the cities of Judah and broke the sacred pillars in pieces, cut down the wooden images, and threw down the high places and the altars. From all Judah, Benjamin, Ephraim, and Manasseh, until they had utterly destroyed them all. Then all the children of Israel returned to their own cities, every man to his possession. And Hezekiah appointed the divisions of the priests and the Levites according to their divisions, each man according to his service. The priests and Levites for burnt offerings and peace offerings, to serve, to give thanks, and to praise in the gates of the camp of the Lord. The king also appointed a portion of his possessions for the burnt offerings, for the morning and evening burnt offerings, the burnt offerings for the Sabbaths and the new moons and the set feasts, as it is written in the law of the Lord. Moreover, he commanded the people who dwelt in Jerusalem to contribute support for the priests and the Levites, that they might devote themselves to the law of the Lord. As soon as the commandment was circulated, the children of Israel brought in abundance the first fruits of grain and wine, oil and honey, and of all the produce of the field. And they brought in abundantly the tithe of everything. And the children of Israel and Judah, who dwelt in the cities of Judah, brought the tithe of oxen and sheep, also the tithe of holy things, which were consecrated to the Lord their God, they laid in heaps. In the third month, they began laying them in heaps, and they finished in the seventh month. And when Hezekiah and the leaders came and saw the heaps, they blessed the Lord and his people Israel. Then Hezekiah questioned the priests and the Levites concerning the heaps, and Azariah, the chief priest from the house of Zadok, answered him and said, since the people began to bring the offerings into the house of the Lord, we have had enough to eat and have plenty left. For the Lord has blessed his people, and what is left is this great abundance. Now Hezekiah commanded them to prepare rooms in the house of the Lord, and they prepared them. Then they faithfully brought in the offerings, the tithes, and the dedicated things. Conaniah the Levite had charge of them, and Shimei his brother was the next. Jehiel, Azaziah, Nahath, Azahiel, Jeremoth, Jozabad, Eliel, Ismachiah, Mahath, and Benaniah were overseers under the hand of Conaniah and Shammai, his brother, at the commandment of Hezekiah the king and Azariah the ruler of the house of God. Kori, the son of Imnah the Levite, the keeper of the east gate, was over the free will offerings to God, to distribute the offerings of the Lord and the most holy things. And under him were Eden, Miniamin, Yeshua, Shemaiah, Amariah, and Shechaniah, his faithful assistants in the cities of the priests, to distribute allotments to their brethren by divisions, to the great as well as the small. Besides those males from 3 years old and up who were written in the genealogy, they distributed to everyone who entered the house of the Lord his daily portion for the work of his service by his division. And to the priests who were written in the genealogy according to their father's house, and to the Levites from 20 years old and up according to their work by their divisions, and to all who were written in the genealogy, their little ones and their wives, their sons and daughters, the whole company of them. For in their faithfulness they sanctified themselves in holiness. Also for the sons of Aaron the priests, who were in the fields of the common lands of their cities, in every single city, there were men who were designated by name to distribute portions to all the males among the priests and to all who were listed by genealogies among the Levites. Thus Hezekiah did throughout all Judah, and he did what was good and right and true before the Lord his God. And in every work that he began in the service of the house of God, in the law and in the commandment to seek his God, he did it with all his heart. So he prospered. So we see the great effort that this particular king made for under previous kings, the king had become the driver and the main source of whether things went well or whether things went poorly in the kingdom. And Hezekiah came in and was reversing that because he loved the Lord. So they came to a time of feasting, and the people were encouraged to keep the feast going. Then the king made a large donation. Now, previously, God had warned the people that the king would take what they had and would benefit from their work. So again, all he did was give back what he had previously taken, as well as the priests and the Levites made a larger donation based on or built on what the people had given them. The people rejoiced, they partied, they broke down the idols, because they had been worshiping, or at least allowing others to worship other idols or idols. Then they went home. The priestly duties, which had ceased, were restored. Here the people were commanded to obey the law of the tithe, as written in the law of the Lord, in order to support the priesthood. And their response was so great that it took 4 months for it to be brought from all over the nation. The needs of the priests were more than met. Storerooms in the house of the Lord were prepared to store the remainder, with overseers appointed to disperse the goods as necessary. All these had been neglected, bringing God's judgment on Israel until they realized the error of their ways. And again, that error was realized by the king. And it wasn't until the king realized those errors that the changes that were necessary in the governance of the nation, that it would make a difference. Certainly, there were many people amongst the priesthoods, amongst the different people groups, that recognized that they had failed to follow the written law and had turned away from it. But their voices would not make a difference until that change came from the top. Because the people had asked for a king, God had given them a king. And because of that, the change had to come from the king. So we will finish up a review of that pivotal moment when Hezekiah restores the relationship, restores the rightful place of the law of Moses into the land of Israel. And once they start following that law again, we'll see what happens. And yet, again, it falls. It's fascinating. We think that there was a consistency in following the law and that God's blessings followed that. And just as in our own lives, there's an ebb and a flow. So we will pick it up there next week. If you have any questions, don't hesitate to drop me a line at diane@therainersclub.org. And if you've got any questions specifically about the topic we're discussing, it's always good to hear and have discussion about that as well. So thanks for tuning in. You can get in touch with me at diane@therainersclub.org through Blog Talk Radio. Until next week, this has been Diane Thomas of Rainers Radio. Have a great night.